Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Good, we're good to go.
Awesome. Sounds
Let's
good.
start with your year of graduation and your major, including if you finished up coursework spring, summer, or fall.
My year of graduation was the spring of 2023, and I was a double major in piano performance and contemporary writing and production. And then I also was a liberal arts minor. I did an individualized minor with an emphasis in what I call journalism. But for me, it was a lot of nonfiction writing courses and narrative-based work, pretty much. And I
Wow.
also did some pro arts courses as part of that minor as well.
Got it. And I think you said piano performance, so that was your principal instrument, right?
Yeah, piano performance, and I was a piano principal.
Terrific. We will get to your history later, but for now, tell us about your current job. Where do you work? What do you do?
I work as a faculty support specialist over at Harvard Business School. I think about my work in a lot of different capacities. I mean, a lot of the day-to-day is administrative, managing calendars, answering emails. But the piece that I really, really enjoy about my job, I think, is the ability to help faculty facilitate education and the delivery of education to students. So a lot of the times I'm managing Canvas, I'm making and producing materials along with faculty for their courses. I'm setting up the administrative structures and helping to keep the faculty organized, so then when they deliver their classes, they have everything that they need. So I like to look at my job as both one, a largely administrative role, but a big part of it is in helping faculty to deliver their educational goals and programs to the students here at the business school.
Right. I spoke with the other person at the Harvard Business School. Is it true, like, you're assigned four faculty to work with?
Somewhat. I mean, the models have changed over the years,
Okay.
and it's definitely very individual. I actually have a couple of things. So I have three faculty that I support. And I also coordinate an entire first year course. So, essentially those two buckets are one with the faculty, it's supporting any individual programs and classes that they teach, but with supporting a first year course, I'm actually supporting a group of 10 faculty, and figuring out kind of the administrative pieces that they need to organize and deliver the same exact course to all 10 sections of that class, for me, it's for the fall semester, when that course happens.
Okay, wow. Sorry, the course happens like it's going to start in fall of 2025.
It's a course that happens every year.
Okay.
And I started supporting that course. It's a course in technology and operations, and I started supporting that course in the fall of 2023, when I started working here, and then I just had another round with that same course again this past fall.
Got it, got it. So it's not a brand new developing course, but I'm sure the
No, not at
material
all.
changes a little bit.
There's maybe small material changes, maybe small content changes, but maybe shifts to the faculty that are teaching it, but the course itself remains the same largely.
Gotcha. So could you take us like through a typical day, hour by hour, what you might be doing?
Usually for myself, I like to start early, so usually I get to work 7:30, 8 a.m. A lot of it usually is starting the day with like answering emails, answering and like trying to like clear my inbox pretty much, address anything from the day previous, triage if there's any immediate items and whatnot. I would say that's most of the day to day. However, on days that my faculty might be teaching, what I'll be doing usually is checking in with my faculty. If we have guests for the class, I'll be checking in with the guests, making sure they get to the campus all right, making sure they know where they're going and they get to the places that they need. And then outside of that, any materials that the faculty might need, whether it's like printout for class or setting up the technology in the classroom, making sure that they're all set. And then once the teaching happens, usually I'm free to go. And it's pretty much me working on just any other items from other faculty, whether it's administrative things, calendaring, whatnot. And then sometimes I might have a few meetings interspersed. Usually it's for more long-term things, like if it's like planning for a future semester, or if there's a large project or initiative that's coming up, then these are all things that I might be like working on, meeting other teams for, and kind of coordinating and kind of just figuring out like the different points for various kind of needs for faculty projects, whatnot.
Terrific. Okay. All right, great. And you alluded to how you enjoyed structuring the educational practice, because I was kind of follow up is that, what is it about your job that you enjoy? I mean, you mentioned that piece. Is there anything else that you particularly enjoy about your job?
I think something that I also really enjoy is I enjoy engaging and learning about the scholarship of the faculty that I'm working with. I support faculty that are working in areas of understanding leadership for large companies or understanding operations and the intersection of technology. One of my faculty focused specifically on leadership and CEOs and the studies of CEO leadership for very large companies and how they navigate turbulent times within companies or transformation of companies. And I think that I enjoy being able to help them in supporting their work on this research and also being able to gain lessons and learn from them and their insights on various industries and various aspects of the people and the things that they study. So I think that that's another piece that I truly really enjoy about my job as well.
All right, that's terrific. And by so it's like it's an in-person job as opposed to remote work.
Yeah, I mean it's a hybrid job. I think that was something that kind of changed from the pandemic. People that have been here a lot longer have told me that they used to have like computers that were chained to the desks and you had to come in every single day and all that type of stuff. And then during the pandemic, they of course moved completely remotely. They had to get laptops for everyone. And then since then, it's become a hybrid position. So I come into the office usually 3 to 4 days a week. I'm only required to come in 3 days a week, and then I have the option to work from home. So usually, I come in when my faculty are teaching, when I'm helping with special programs and whatnot, and then on the days when I'm expecting it just to be things I can handle from my inbox, then I largely will work from home.
Great. And there are benefits to working at a university, are there? Are you taking classes at Harvard, or do you have?
Yeah, that is definitely one of the benefits. I think that's one of the wonderful things about being at Harvard is the number of benefits that they do offer their employees. So I'm currently doing my master's. I'm doing a master's in the fine arts in creative writing over at Emerson College. So I've been balancing that out, but one of the benefits is, of course, Harvard is helping me with some of my tuition.
Oh,
And
nice.
then I am also taking some classes at Harvard as well. All employees are able to take classes at the extension school. And what's nice is the extension school is kind of expensive in terms of like per credit like costs, but we're able to take classes for $40 a class at the extension school. And some
Just
of these
enough, charging
classes,
just enough to make you not sign up for 10 months
yeah.
ahead.
Right. Just enough to make us like take the class seriously, but not so much that like we wouldn't consider taking the classes. And I think it's what's nice is that they're incredibly discounted relative to what anyone else would have to pay. And also at the same time, these are classes that we can take for graduate credit. We can work towards like I'm taking a class on statistics this semester. That for
Oh, wow.
graduate credit because I'm interested in possibly doing a certificate in data analytics because that's another topic that I've kind of been getting interested in.
All right. Terrific. Okay, so let's take it back now to 2023. Although, if you feel this story has a logical earlier starting point, we can take it back before that. But I mean, I'm guessing you're not thinking, oh, I'll be a faculty support specialist. You know, I could be wrong. But, you know, put us in your headspace as Berkeley was wrapping up, and then we'll take it one step at a time from there to where you are now. Both in terms of what you were doing, but also there's like where you were at mentally in terms of your career.
I might take it back a few months prior. I was originally, while I was at Berkeley, I was working at a music education startup that was based in Silicon Valley. I had gotten that job after interning the summer after my freshman year. And I had worked at that company as a music teacher, teaching and managing a studio of about 40 students. I wasn't the one teaching all 40 students,
Was
but I
this
was
remote teaching,
managing.
you mean?
This was remote teaching. Yeah, this is a completely remote job that I was doing while I was doing my degree. And I was managing a studio of 40 students, five instructors. I was actually, because the company was so young, I was building out their curriculum. I built out a curriculum for certifying like students passing my program. I was building out curriculum for them to learn sight reading and rhythm and all these other things,
Wow.
and also like teaching classes on media scoring and on composition. And it was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed the applications of a lot of my Berkeley, I think, knowledge and being able to use that and give that to students and mentor students as well. But I think that one, it was very intense. It was a startup, so there was a lot of moments where, and it was also based on the West Coast, so time zones were challenging. It worked out when I was an undergrad because most of the time I would just do my classes morning, afternoon, get off, and then I would go back home and I'd work all the way until late, until around 11 p.m. at night.
By the way, can I,
Which,
do you mind if I ask, where are you from? Are you from California?
yeah, I'm actually, yeah, I'm originally from California. I'm from San Jose, California. So
Got it. So
that's where the company was
had it
based,
been like a
and
personal connection that got you the
it
internship?
was, yeah. So it was my my piano teacher from high school. I got in touch with him because I was trying to look for work after my freshman year of high school. I mean, my freshman year at Berkeley, and I reached out to him, and I learned that he had left the piano school that he was teaching at, where I had learned. And he said, "I'm starting this company. We're going to address piano education and the issues in traditional models of piano education. If you're interested," he was like, "I would love to have you intern with us for the summer." And then afterwards, I pretty much treated it like a full-time job that summer. And I just, and I, he decided to keep me on, as an instructor. And, over time, I took on increasing number of responsibilities at the company,
Wow,
with a lot of various projects and different things.
Was it?
But yeah.
I won't ask exact numbers, but was it paying well, or were you doing all this amazing stuff for internship money?
So it wasn't a paid internship. When I was, so for the first 2 months, I was just like, I need something to do. So I wasn't paid for the first couple months. And then eventually I was moved to work on an hourly basis. And it was about, I think when I started to actually have a more solid, stable hours at the company, it was about $20 an hour,
It's
which
not
was
bad.
for me not bad. Like I was I was working as like I had some positions as a work study. I had before I had stable hours at that company, I was working a retail job that was paying me Massachusetts minimum wage, which was in 2019 about $13.
Oh, right. I forgot it wasn't 15 yet.
So I think for me, I was like, no, this is great, like especially because it allowed me to be able to afford like some of my living expenses, be able to pay out like I was able to pay for my rent and like food and whatnot. So I think that afforded me like some level of independence. And so I definitely appreciated that, and the fact that I could work and apply the skills that I was learning at Berkeley in that job. And yeah, like
Right,
I think
just
over time.
go
Oh
ahead.
yeah, go ahead.
No, I
Oh
was about
yeah.
to say, because you initially were doing backstory because you were saying there was some big point a few months before you graduated.
Yeah. So yeah, fast forwarding, I think in my last year, I wanted to spend more time because I was practically working full time, essentially, if I counted my hours, alongside my degree. And I think I was realizing how much that was taking me away from being able to be involved in the Berkeley community, being able to like make connections and make friends and all these other things. And I talked to my boss at the time, and I said, like, this is my last year at Berkeley. Is there a way I could step back in some way and significantly reduce my hours? And then with the hopes that after I graduate, I'll go full time again with the company.
Sure.
And I think I got to a certain point where I felt there was a lot of shifting things in my life. At that point, I was also moving towards applying to master's programs, and I knew I was only going to do a master's in music. I was going to do a master's in the fine arts and creative writing. And I was seeing my life kind of be pulled in a different direction,
Can I ask
I think.
quickly what made you
Yeah.
say creative writing? I just want to dig into
Yeah.
that. What made you not say master? Because I've spoke with people who got a master's in music,
Yeah.
and that's the most certainly a common degree for a Berkeley grad. So what made you go creative writing?
I think I had a professor at Berkeley. He's still there, Vadim Nesilovsky. I worked with him for almost my entire time at Berkeley. He was my piano professor. I had him for private instruction. And something that I'll always remember him telling me is that he said, find the things that you're good at and work the hardest at that. And I think for myself, I don't know whether it was being like overwhelmed by the amount of talent that I was at Berkeley, or whether it was just kind of like feeling like I wasn't sure like where I was going with all the things I was learning. Like I was like, I think most of my peers saw me as like I was very good at doing the things and being myself. Like I would take production classes and composition classes, and I would, do my best to fulfill the requirements of the projects, but there was always like a tinge that was kind of like myself, which I think it was like, which I felt like I've learned to come to appreciate that in a lot of
Okay,
ways. But I
that's a
think
good thing.
something that I really found was this draw towards writing. And I think it started, I took a gap year during the pandemic, and I started working at this for this nonprofit. And at this nonprofit, I was originally given a position as a writer. So I was like writing articles on like social justice topics and experimenting with writing just in general.
Do you mind sharing the name of the
And
nonprofit?
yeah, it's a nonprofit called Dear Asian Youth. It was started in 2020, and I got heavily involved and spent about 4 years in the nonprofit, going all the way up to eventually sit on their director's board for a little bit, and then eventually departing this in the summer of 2024. But I was writing for them for a good amount of time, and I was involved in mentoring writers and writing my own articles and my own pieces. And I shared some of my writing and some of my work with I'm forgetting her name. She teaches the social justice literature course at Berkeley.
There was Sally
But
Blazer, maybe?
No, not her. It's escaping me right now. But yeah, so but She was saying, like, oh, like, I see the work that you're
Which I
doing.
tried to Schwalbach.
No,
Okay.
no.
All right.
It's,
Just never mind.
yeah, I do know who that is, though. I want to take a class with her originally, but I don't think but I don't think it really lined up, unfortunately.
Okay.
But yeah, so what happened was she was saying, like, this is actually how I ended up doing the liberal arts minor, was she was like, I see the work that you're doing in writing. And she was like, would you be interested? Like, we don't have any writing, like there's a creative writing minor. But like I always said, I was kind of more interested in journalism. And I was like, she was like, okay, so if you're interested in journalism, I thought I was maybe going to pursue like going the route of like music journalism or something like that.
Sure.
And then, so she was like, well, talk to the chair of the liberal arts department, and we have this thing where you can do your individualized minor. You can chart some coursework. You can propose an idea, chart some coursework, and get a minor in what you are interested in. And I reached out to she's I can't I'm forgetting everyone's names right now, which is kind of embarrassing. But I reached out and I started had a few meetings, and I was paired with I'm forgetting everyone's names.
Oh
I was
no.
paired with the faculty. I was paired with the faculty who like they were trying to find a faculty mentor, because part of doing the liberal arts minors, you have to find a faculty mentor kind of in the field of what you want to do.
Okay.
And they will kind of mentor you on your coursework. And what happened was my faculty mentor was so they found a faculty mentor, and she had been working. They couldn't find anyone directly in journalism, but she had been working kind of in magazine publishing.
Okay.
And so I was paired with her, and we had some sessions, and she was looking at my writing and noticed that I did some poetry, and she was like, oh, I'd love to read more. I'd love to like take a look at your work. And I shared a lot of my work, and at some point she asked me, like, right now we're working on creating this minor focused on journalism, and she was like, I think you should do this. But she was like, you're already kind of doing this work, and if you already want to go into journalism, like, you don't really need to do a master's for it. But I see that there's a thread of creative writing that you have. And she was
Yeah.
saying, she also had done an MFA in creative writing, specifically in fiction from NYU. And she was saying, like, I see that, would you be more interested in, or would you consider possibly like considering doing an MFA? And she was like, because she was like, I did an MFA. It opens up doors, well, not only to develop your writing creatively, and develop your writing academically as well, but
Okay. Oh.
there's and all these other things. Oh, is everything okay?
Sorry, you went silent for like 2 seconds,
Oh,
but it's
okay.
fine.
Yeah.
Right,
So
so that
that's
piqued
an
your interest, and that was then the MFA.
yeah, that piqued my interest in the MFA. And I think I and then once when and that was the summer. By the time that I had that conversation, it was summer of 2022.
Okay.
I was going into my last year at Berkeley. I was kind of seeing on the horizon, okay, if I want to be in a master's program by next fall, I have to start applying and thinking about schools. So I made the decision, and it felt almost deja vu to when I had applied to Berkeley in some ways, where it was like the summer before I went to Berkeley. I was like, okay, I'm gonna do a music degree. And so I was like, the summer before my last year at Berkeley, I said, I'm going to apply to MFA programs and see where that goes. And I started applications, and I think over that year I started to really try to involve myself. Like, if I'm going to do a degree in writing, I was like, what are the classes that I can take? So like I took Pat Pattison's creative writing poetry class, which I've told Pat many, many times how his class has kept me afloat in my MFA and how if I had not taken his class, I don't know where I would be
oh, wow.
in my program. So if anyone's interested, I definitely recommend that class. It's a really wonderful class on forms. And I think going in and having Pat's class that focused on forms just tuned me to listening to poetry and thinking about poetry in such a different way that when I went to my MFA, I realized it was a skill in my back pocket that allowed me to have conversations and look at poetry in the same ways as my peers that may have done an undergrad in creative writing or in literature or whatnot. But anyways, so trying to get back to the trying to pull that original thread, so I saw a lot of kind of changing things. I wanted to get more involved in my last year at Berkeley. I wanted to do a lot of the things I was seeing my peers do, like get involved with shows and show up to clubs and actually make friends. Because I think during the pandemic, it was very conducive to just like keep my head down and work. Because like, I don't want like, it's like, I don't need to like, I don't want to like get other people sick. And I don't want to like worry about COVID and all these things. But as things were kind of shifting, I was like, okay, so I talked to my boss and we had worked out a plan where I was going to reduce my hours for my last year at Berkeley. And then once I graduated, we would have a conversation about going full time again. And so I did that and I have really no regrets. I mean, I did the Budaya show with the Berkeley Malaysian Club, with the Berkeley Malaysian Association, and made so many friends. I got involved with the Asian American Club at Berkeley. I got involved with so many other shows and so many connections, and I was like, wow, only if I had done this sooner. But of course, you know, things, COVID happened and it was complicated. So I think so I think that was really, really a positive decision. But about, I think, 2 months before I graduated, and at this point, I was already getting rejections and acceptances to MFA programs.
Sure.
I was kind of seeing how my trajectory was shifting, and I was thinking like, oh, if I get into a program, I'm going to need to figure out how I'm going to either be able to continue working or be able to keep myself financially afloat while I'm doing my master's. And I was also thinking about a lot of programs, like my Emerson program the classes are in the evenings. And I was thinking about how like my job currently, like I could, it, the hours were always going to be afternoon to evenings, East Coast time, because it was an after school program based on the West Coast. So then I was saying like this job really worked well for when I was in undergrad. But as I'm shifting, I think I want to kind of have a more like East Coast 9-to-5 like type of position.
Sure.
With some more stability and maybe a better work-life balance. I think that was another thing. Cause there were moments like, I think that like the work was intense and I think there were moments like sometimes we needed to get deliverables to clients and I was up to like 2 or 3 in the morning, like editing sound reels and and other things. Cause the startup did a lot. Like the main focus was education, but we did a lot of other projects for, in the area of music. So I decided that I would resign from my position at that company, 2 months before, my graduation. I was like, I'll be okay. I have a couple, work study positions that I was doing, like, and I could just kind of like, see if I can increase my hours there. And then once I graduate, I'll just be like fully unemployed and searching for jobs,
okay.
Essentially. And also when I graduated, I had been accepted into Emerson's MFA program. So that was big highlight. I had gone to a fellowship and I had also gotten some scholarships. So I was like, okay, I'm going to Emerson, and I'm going to do their program. But I knew that I needed to find a job to be able to afford tuition, afford living in Boston and all these things.
Of course.
So graduation happens. I decide to, my family, of course, it's a big occasion. Since I'm the oldest of all my siblings, mm-hmm. and, I take a few weeks off travel with my family, spend some time with my family. I go back to California for a whole month and I just decide I'm gonna start applying to jobs. And I didn't really know where, except that I knew a few threads that I had worked in the Berkeley Ensemble office as a work study for about 3 years, part-time. I had worked as an ESL tutor my last year, and I think a big part of wanting to do my MFA was I wanted to be engaging with students in some way. So I said, I'm not qualified to teach or be a faculty at this current time, but Boston has a lot of universities, and a lot of universities need administrators for a lot of different things. They need program coordinators. And I was like, I have a lot of skills from my last job. Granted, it was in music, but I have a lot of administrative skills, whether it's knowing how to put together a program or knowing how to think through the logistics of administration, handling complex calendars. I helped to, when I was in the ensemble office, I would help them to organize the ratings auditions, which were always this huge logistical lift every single semester, trying
Sure.
to get 300 students to in front of professors so they can play music with a live band.
No, it sounded like you have a very strong background to work in education at this point.
So I kind of pulled that together, worked and then also in the nonprofit, I had been pulled in to do some operations work, even though I didn't expect to do operations.
Okay.
It was a lot of oh, you have to think about my career in a lot of ways that were really, really helpful. And he said, knowing your background and because he was saying he's saying you have all these administrative skills. Knowing your background, why don't you look for a job at Harvard? And I had frankly not thought about Harvard because I was thinking I'm coming from Berkeley, let me think about schools that are in the Pro Arts Consortium, very
Sure.
similar to Berkeley, like Emerson or the Architectural School or some of the other art schools. I had also applied to BU and other places as well, MIT, because I was Berkeley has some connections with MIT. And he was like, why don't you look at Harvard and see what jobs they have? So the next day I looked up job postings at Harvard and I found faculty support specialist. I was like, okay, I have a lot of these administrative experiences, that I can do. And they were fast, honestly. It was, a lot of other places took weeks to get back to me. And I remember I applied to the position and the next day they were like, hi, can we do an intake call? And I was planning to be in California for a month and then get back to Boston, by the 4th of July. And I had my intake call, first interview, second interview. We had to do a whole, like a process kind of examination type of thing where we demonstrated some of our administrative skills over like a hypothetical,
Sure.
Thing. And then I got back to Boston, and the morning that I landed in Boston, I got a call and they were like, hi, we'd like to offer you a position. I was like, well, no one else has gone back to me. I'll take it.
So
And they were like, when would you like to start? And I was like, and I took a couple of weeks off. And I think I was able to relax a little bit because I was having that stress of I need to find something. And I was like, I'll be okay if I find something by the end of the year. But there was still that kind of driving, I need to find a position.
of course.
And so I started July of 2023, which was relatively fast given the job market, knowing I had friends that had applied to hundreds of jobs and waited months and months and months to land somewhere. And then I think the things just kind of grew from there, and I was really fortunate to have a lot of administrative experience going because it's an entry-level position, so you have people of varying backgrounds. But I think because of my heavy administrative experience beforehand, they gave me a lot of very complex and when I say complex, I mean also very exciting things to be doing, whether that's specialized programs, faculty that are involved in a lot of things on campus. because they trusted me to take on this work. And I think that that has allowed me to really, really engage with the campus community, understand a lot of and get a lot of insights into the school through the faculty that I've been working with and the programs that I've been helping to support and put on.
All right. That's terrific. And here you are.
Yeah, and here I am. Yeah.
You're still in the middle of the MFA program, correct?
I am. I'm right in the middle, actually. I just finished my my third semester. It's a 3-year program, so I'm a year and a half in, and I have a year and a half out.
Fantastic. All right. Yeah. So moving on to the third part of the interview of three. Let me preface the next question with there is no right or wrong answer.
Yeah.
So these days, defining these days as, you know, the later part of 2024 into 2025, what, if anything, is your current relationship with music?
Yeah, that was a hard part. I had a lot of conversations when I was leaving Berkeley, and I knew that I was going into a creative writing master's, and I knew that I was looking for jobs, not in music. I was like, what's to do with my music degree and all these things that I've learned? I think that I found various threads of extensible skills from when I was at Berkeley. I think
that's going to get into another.
But yeah. But I'll get into another thing.
Question,
but anyways, I think a long list of extensible skills from when I was at Berkeley. But I think what I'll say is it took some time, I think, and I think it was needed time though, because I think Berkeley it's intense too, and I think I didn't know what I wanted to do with music afterwards. I didn't really play much piano after, and like I did like some like projects, like I know that I had a well my it was a friend then, my now partner had asked me, she was involved in another nonprofit and asked me to she was tasked with creating a podcast, and she was like, I need music for this podcast, and I was like, I think I can help you there. So I was able to kind of pull on some like production skills. And I've had various friends ask me, there was one student, who I'm friends with, who asked me like, oh, like I'm doing, my EPD capstone. I know you're in a creative writing major, and I'd really love to have you try and write a song for my capstone. So like, I was like, yeah, I'd be happy to like, so I did a lyric project. I did some music for a podcast. And then there's an art show here at, Harvard every year for the staff. I was able to partake in the art show both as a performer and also to showcase some of my poetry. And more recently, from that art show, the director of the kind of like campus events, learned about my background, and she was like, we normally have a student perform every week in our lounge, on the piano. And it was like, I saw you perform at the art show. I know that you have a music degree. I know that you can take on these heavier performances that like are like an hour, half hour, whatnot. Would you be interested in taking on a weekly gig to play piano just for the students, for the ambiance, every single week? So I started that last fall, and I'm continuing that into the spring.
Do you mind if I get a little nosy here? Is that like a paid thing, or is that just sort of like as part of your job done as a courtesy?
It's paid. Not part of my job, but like paid, like it is an opportunity that I'm paid for on top of like I'm paid like a small amount for every like hour that I play, pretty much.
Okay. I've got to lay my cards on the table here, because I'm figuring out what category to throw you in. Because I have a category of casual, where people are doing music but really not making money doing it, and another category is semi-professional, which is where, you know, you're doing it and it's like a side job. And I literally put the cutoff at like $1,000 a year.
It definitely falls into the former. Like, I'm not making anything really particularly meaningful
Okay, so you're not
from
making the
it.
1,000 a year, but it's a little bit.
No.
Got it.
Yeah, like it's a like it's a little it's like a like a like I could buy my like enough to like I can I don't know buy myself a nicer a nice lunch or something.
I
You know, like
understand.
like instead of
Totally got it. And again, there's no right or wrong answer. For what it's worth, the category which I'm going to put you in, which I call casual, that's the most common category that I put people in.
Yeah, I
So.
mean, I think that's that is I think for me that is probably the most present aspect of how music shows up for me these days is just that one thing is I think it works for me because it's I don't I think I also kind of had to come to terms a little bit with my mentality around music and this and particularly around the stress I had around performing a lot of the times.
Sure.
And I think kind of taking that time off and then kind of slowly coming back to it in kind of a very light and very easy way. Like there's no pressure with a lot of these gigs. It's kind of like if you play, you know, if I play, which I do every week, it's like I'll get paid for it. If I, you know, if I don't play, it's not a big deal. And it's for the ambiance again. It's not like I'm the center of attention.
Yeah, it's
Which
a
makes it also kind of easier for me to kind of like keep that in my life and also feel like it's very low stakes and still have some aspect of music.
awesome. So you were starting to push into this next one when I stopped you, but I'm going to circle back to it now, which is, is there anything you feel your Berklee experience did particularly well to prepare you for what you're now doing professionally? I know that, yeah, if you'd gone to some
I
other random
think,
college.
I've had a lot of conversations with my peers and with my partner, who went to a different college than I did. And I know a lot of Berklee students will gripe about the professional development courses, but I think that it set me up so well, just in terms of the skills that it gave me, when it came to like when it came to like having a website and having like a resume, and I think also the as a performance major, there's a high level of I think professionalism that we're oftentimes held to, partly because it's like it's like you can't be late for the gig because once the show starts, it's like you know, the show starts. Or like or even when you're like even as a production major, like you kind of have to cross all your T's and dot all your I's because like if a mic's not working, it's because you didn't wire something correctly or you're not channeling something. So I think that it made a lot of the skills that I think I take into my job that have made me perform very well is one, a sense of professionalism and understanding where the like the things that are flexible and the things that are not. Like if I treat teaching and the faculty going in to teach their class as the performance, as the gig, it's like I can change and adjust and improvise everything up to that very moment. The moment they're in front of the students, like if they don't have a material that's ready, if they don't have something that's prepped, if they don't have what they need, then they have to improve. Then the loss is to the quality of that lesson or that. And similar to like a performance, it's like you go through all these logistics to make sure that like things go well on a performance. Whether it's like making sure you have the right equipment, you have the right gear, you sound check, you have the people that you need, whatnot. So I think that that played like a very powerful analogy to how I think about my work in a lot of ways.
Sure.
And also at the same time, the attention to detail, like, and partly it could be that like I'm in a creative writing master's, so it's kind of like, you know, it's like my attention to like wording and grammar and all these other types of things. But I think also at the same time, it's like thinking about like how does one make something happen, because education, sometimes there's a level of improvisation that has to happen. It's kind of like, I have this idea that I want to put on for the students, or I want to try and like present this thing to the students. The other day, my faculty asked me if I knew anything about video editing, because he was like, we have a company that's coming in, and they basically, this company present, like, did a lot of like animation work, and I have a reel of like 15 videos that like are all separate, and I want to play a little bit of it for the students. And I said, yeah, I do actually know a little bit of video editing, and here's how I can like, here's how we can like throw together a reel for the students really, really quickly. So I think that there's these little skills that in some ways are kind of weirdly niche, but I've found to be very useful, whether it's like being able to use various softwares that deal with assets like video and music, even if it's in a, you know, pedagogical or like in a teaching like function. It's the, I think, ability to have like a high attention to detail, like thinking about like, oh, like communications to students, especially like when I'm managing a course of 1,000 students, it's like my announcements and communications are need to be very concise and need to be very like, I need to focus on like every single like spelling and grammatical thing there. And I think this logistics kind of mind that comes through, like when I think of like the getting in front of students as almost as the performance, or as the gig of like all the preparation work that needs to happen, whether it's like prepping slides, prepping printouts, prepping the materials for the lessons, whatnot. The faculty, of course, play a huge part in driving that, but I think it's kind of like me making sure that things don't fall through the cracks, has been. So I think those like skills that kind of come from like, sure, from, I think, like from one, a practicing an instrument to a very high level, and then also like being in like a production, like when I was in CWP, like we would have debates over like, do you hear the difference between this compressor and that compressor, and to know that these tiny little things like do actually matter.
Yeah,
to some degree, like right. Like that context, I think, and that I learned, I think, helps me a lot in my job. And then the detail oriented part, like, and really thinking through the details and understanding the details. So I think that's probably like the biggest thing that I think about, in terms of where I take my Berkeley degree and the skills. And then the other pieces, like, yeah, like knowing how to like write a good resume, having a website. Like, I'm realizing that these are things that I was given in Berkeley classes, that a lot of my peers weren't given or didn't have or don't have any background or experience in. And I think that setup to make you like that professional development that tries to really set you up to be like your own, like to set up your own personal kind of like brand in a way, has helped me when it comes to networking, or like, cause I'm in a business school. It's like, it's kind of like people want to know, like, what do you do? And like, what's your background and all these other things, and kind of being able to go like, oh, like look at my portfolio, look at my website, you know, like, so these other things, like, I think has also enhanced my ability to have, make connections and have professional opportunities that have popped up, within my job, like working here.
Awesome. All right, so gonna turn that question around now,
which yeah.
is right. Berkeley gives that bachelor of music degree. You went there knowing that you're doing very well for yourself. But
yeah,
all that said, when you look back at your Berkeley education, is there anything where you go, you know, hey, it would have been really useful to have learned this as at Berkeley, and they could have taught it to me, and they didn't. Anything missing or incomplete?
Oh, yeah, okay. Uh-huh.
I'm sorry. Yeah,
No. That's all good. Yeah, I have to think about that one. I think that I don't know, and I think that what I think about really is there's a lot of things that I think I had to learn, like post Berkeley, like that were just factors of like my job and my program. Like I was joking the other day with my professor in my class, and I was saying like my first semester of grad school, I had to give myself a crash course on literary theory, and at least know the names of all the major literary theorists, so then I could do some of the work that I was doing in my grad program, and also I work part time as a research assistant for a professor, for an Emerson professor. And I was saying, but I don't think that, like, I mean, I think when I was at Berkeley, there were probably a lot of things where I was like, oh, like, I wish that there were like more like STEM classes or like language classes or like kind of things that like I think a lot of my friends that went to like a larger university might have had. But I think at the end of the day, like, what's most powerful, I think, is how one sets up a person to learn and pick up new skills, because the learning doesn't end like after you graduate in any capacity. And I think that with Berkeley, like whether it was understanding like how to produce music really well, to write an arrangement that resonates, or to practice your instrument and perfect a technique for a piece, I think it taught me and gave, and I think it gave me a confidence because of how much I did when I was at Berkeley, that no matter where I could go, like if I could identify the skills that I need, if I could identify the foundations that I'm and have clarity, that I will be able to have the willingness and the wherewithal, I think, to learn those things. And it brings me back to a professor, this one I do remember, it's Rebecca Klein. She told me that her time at Berkeley was learning, not necessarily learning all the things that she knows, but learning how much she didn't know.
That's cool.
And I think that mindset, I think, is what kind of maybe helped me to kind of say like, oh, like, yeah, Berkeley doesn't have classes on this, and Berkeley doesn't have classes on this. And it would be nice to have like certain things. But at the same time, I think it was kind of like, I think it gave me a broad enough education in certain areas and a niche enough education in some other areas that when I got out into the world and had and started my master's and started working, that I would be able to take those skills and that I'll use their passion and curiosity, because I think that's how any of us really get to where we are when we're at Berkeley, is like that curiosity of how does this compressor sound versus that,
Sure.
or how can I make this like really hard technical piece playable, and that exploration that really drove me to the places that I am in. And I think also this part of the artist of being true to yourself, finding the things that you're really good at and working the hardest at those things. So I think it's kind of like there's a level of like practical that has to be, I think, driven into that as well. Like needing to have a job, needing to be able to be financially smart and stable and all these other things. But I think for me, it was like constructing a life, like following intuition and curiosity and just seeing where those things take you, and not having any judgment to how that manifests, even if it seems like you should be following a certain path.
Good.
Well, based on your degree.
You're already starting to answer the next question I was going to ask, which
yeah.
I just phrased it out loud, which is, mm-hmm. you know, so what advice do you have for the current group of Berkeley students?
I think it is that piece that my professor told me is find the things that you're good at and work the hardest at those things. And I think I might say this specifically because Berkeley is a music college. Even if those things are not in music, like don't be afraid to follow those things because, I think that I got into Berkeley. I graduated from Berkeley. I did two majors and when I was there, and even though I am not currently working, quote, in the music industry or in the industry, I think that I still feel very fulfilled and very happy with the direction of life that I have taken. And I think that is because it was through following threads and just embracing where, like, my strengths, my inclinations towards things, and really seeing how can I best fit in and provide and build value for those that are around me and those that will take me in. And I think that, that is what I think really drives me. And I'm also to be curious. I think curiosity is something that is inherent in the artist. And I think that's going to take anyone, lots of different places. And I think that's a really wonderful thing.
That's terrific. Thank you. And to zoom in a little more, I think I mentioned my interview number, I think 256. No one's listening to all 256. So,
yeah.
But you are my second faculty support specialist, and you know who my first was. You know, I think someone who's made it this far is considering a job as a faculty support specialist, or at least, you know, a job on the administrative end of academia.
Yeah.
So for someone who's, you know, not doing it yet, but is thinking about that as a possible career, what specific advice do you have for them?
I would say that this specific job for me is an entry-level job, but I think what it does is it opens a lot of doors and puts you in a really intense but also very wonderful environment of individuals that are at the same time all figuring it out. Like whether I'm working with the faculty who are academics and they're trying to figure out their next research project or the meaning of their research or how to give practical applications to their research, to the students that are working here that come from a myriad of backgrounds and are all trying to figure out that next step in their careers, to the even my coworkers. I think that we come from a myriad of different backgrounds, but I think it's really a great place to kind of like figure things out, to kind of think about where you want to go, and then if you want to go deeper into the Harvard Consortium, into education, like I think that this is a great entryway, especially not having a background in education. And if you don't, I think that there's a number of paths that people have found after this position and this job. I've had coworkers that have taken time and then jumped into law school or jumped into their own master's or did an MBA themselves. I've also had friends that like went into corporate or went into nonprofit, went into so many different places. So I think what's wonderful is that you'll meet a diversity a great diversity of people that are all trying to go into a great diversity, a great diverse group of things. And I think that allows you to vision and envision lots of different paths and possibilities that you can go from there.
Gotcha. That's wonderful. I just have one last question for you, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have the mic. Is there anything we've missed? Anything else you'd like to say?
I think one more thing that I'll say is I think it's very easy to get into the bigger, like to zoom out and look at the bigger picture and to say, like, you know, things work out and make sense. I think that someone could easily look at my journey and say, like, oh yeah, that all makes sense and it worked out. I think that the reality is that there's going to be a lot of questioning and a lot of, like, days of boredom and repetition. And I think something that another professor gave advice to me, he said, is doing the work is very boring and unglorious. But it's the compilation of doing that, of staying consistent, sticking to things, shifting when you need. And that while the 2020 hindsight and the narrative in the rearview mirror might look like it makes sense, none of it made sense as I was going through it. And I'm still going through it and I'm still figuring it out. But I think that there's a stronger foundation of the ability to figure things out to where I am now versus where I might have been a couple of years ago.
Well, that's a wonderful place to end. So I thank you so much, Chris, for making the time to do this. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Of course. Of course, it was. Thank you so much for reaching out. And I'm really, really glad I found your project and also was able to reflect upon a little bit of my journey coming from Berkeley.
That's great. Well, best of luck with everything.
Thank you so much. You as well.
All right. Have a great week.